This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
6:10 in the morning. Hi, how are you? Both of your presidential frontrunners are in deep trouble this morning. Or deeper trouble. You know, is it going to affect anything? Who knows? But Hillary Clinton's email server setter-upper guy is taking an immunity deal to testify to the feds. The Clinton campaign hilariously said, "We welcome this." No, you don't. So that will that'll be news that'll develop in the hours and days ahead. And you remember the Trump thing where he raised $6 million for veterans?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
CNN's reporting that 800,000 of that's been delivered.
Only 800,000.
And how long ago were we in Iowa?
We were in Iowa the end of January, beginning of February.
So we're talking about 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And these were, you know, large checks. This isn't $12 donations. So the fact that you couldn't collect the $6 million immediately for veterans organizations is preposterous.
Right. This is what he. This is the event that he held when he blew off the debate.
Yeah, and several veterans groups said, look, we're not going to be pawns in a stunt. And maybe they knew ahead of time they were going to get the dough anyway. But only 800,000 of the 6 million that was pledged has been delivered. Trump himself said he'd give $1 million, and they can only find something in the neighborhood of a couple of hundred thousand that may have come from his organization.
Yeah, so where did the money go? Where
exactly.
Is the money?
So Trump and Hillary got stuff to answer for this morning. MH370, the flight from Malaysian Airways that disappeared. Another piece of that plane appears to have been found. Richard Quest, the CNN aviation expert, who has always sounded like a cartoon character. There's nobody more Monty Python or over the top than Richard Quest with his British accent. But Quest knows flying and knows aviation and knows this story and has written a book about it, and pretty timely because he will be on today to talk about that. The great actor Brian Dennehy is on the show today. And Kevin, what's Brian Dennehy plugging?
He's in the new movie called Knight of Cups, which releases tomorrow. Christian Bale's in it, Cate Blanchett, Natalie Portman. So we'll talk to him about
that.
Pretty
good cast.
Yeah, great cast.
What did Knight of Cups?
Knight of Cups.
What is that? I don't know. I've never heard of this movie.
Yeah, it, for some reason it hasn't been publicized a ton, but yeah, huge staff.
Zombie cup attack, like cups turn into zombies and attack us, something believable like that?
No, I don't think it's anything like that. Do you want me to read you the synopsis?
Yeah, give me a little
bit. Rick, an uninspired screenwriter living on the event horizon of all the vice and some of the virtues Los Angeles has to offer.
Right.
He's a slave to the Hollywood system, Steve.
Who isn't?
Addicted to success, but simultaneously despairing at the emptiness of his life.
Yeah, well, that sounds like my life story.
With the death of his brother Billy hanging over him and his surviving down on his luck brother needing help getting on his feet,
yep,
Rick seeks distraction in the company of women.
Yep, again, yeah. Totally my biography. Yeah. Who stole my life?
Women seem to know him better than he knows himself.
Yes, 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 yes. How do I not know about this?
Bringing him closer to the heart of things, closer to understanding his place. So he goes through, there's a bunch of storylines of him meeting with other women. I believe Rick is played by Christian Bale.
Brian, so what Denny are the cups? Are the
role.
Cups brassieres? Are the cups little red solo cups? What are they?
We'll have to find out from Brian.
Wow, I'm on the edge of my seat finding out where I'm going to go next.
Exactly.
Again, Brian Dennehy stars in The Story of My Life at 9:40 this morning. We'll talk about that. Politics in the 7 o'clock hour, including Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who is a Rubio supporter, but has said, I will not. This is Kinzinger. I will not vote for Donald Trump under any circumstance.
Mm.
So he's one of the leading Republicans to come out against Trump. Pearson and Adelstein and Brady will all be on. See Brady on TV yesterday?
I did see him on TV yesterday, yeah.
Everybody wants to talk to Pat Brady.
Reminds me when we were at the caucuses and we were walking into one of the rooms and I said, wait, where'd Brady go? Oh, he's talking to Channel 2.
He does a great job.
He does.
Does a great job. And he's bringing common sense to a party that doesn't have any. So I was thinking about Ross Cochran. Join us on the air, if you would, please. Good morning. How are you?
I'm happy to be here.
I was thinking about doing a poll today.
Okay.
Who do you trust more? See if you like this. Who do you trust more? Hillary Clinton?
Yeah.
Bernie Madoff?
Okay.
O.J. Simpson?
Sure.
Or Donald Trump?
Mm.
Wow, what great choices.
How about we...
Well, I think we can agree they all have trust issues.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, how about we use that fancy new Twitter poll feature that you love so much?
I do love the Twitter poll.
The Twitter?
Yeah, the Twitter poll. Uh-huh. I heard about it on the Hulu.
Yeah, so I'll put that up at Cochrane Show right now.
Okay, again, the question is, who do you trust more, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Madoff, O.J. Simpson, or Donald Trump?
That's a solid list.
Yeah, yeah.
But the poll is obviously today, so it's not pre-Madoff, you know, because so many people trusted him in the past. It's present time,
right now. Who do you trust more?
Not that that makes the options any better.
Yeah, because before the White Bronco, I'm sure a lot more people trusted O.J.
Right.
I was among them. And then I turned to women in my life in Hollywood, and look at the mess I became.
Right.
Carol in Wisconsin Dells is the first caller. Congratulations, Carol. Please take care of Carol off the air and give her all the prizes you'd like. And tell me what to plug. And finally, Mitt Romney will speak out today against the Trumpster. Romney making a, quote, major speech today, which I don't understand.
I don't either. There's all kinds of speculation that he might try to get back in.
Well, that would be news. That would be news. If he actually ran, if he got into the race, that would be news. I don't think it'd help necessarily, but it would be news. But if he's just going to come out and smack Trump around, we'll get in line. Who's not doing that now?
And this would be the second or third time he's asked for the tax returns. He's had several events where that's all he's hammering home. Yeah. I hope there's another angle.
Well, here's the two things that would be interesting to see in Donald Trump's tax returns, and it takes us right back to where we started. How much charitable giving has he actually done? Because if you know, billionaires give away a lot of their money, and again, they don't have to, but they do. So if you are as charitable as you claim you are, again, that's a representation of your character. And then is he worth as much as he claims he is? Because that directly relates to how much tax he's paying. You remember Romney got slammed for having a 15% tax rate and being, you know, as wealthy as he was?
Yeah.
Or is.
Yeah.
If Trump has worked the system legally, but worked the system to have a 15% tax rate, that would make him, you know, more disingenuous than ever. And again, if you are the type of person that's going to believe Trump until the day you die, you know, forget about it. That part's over.
Right.
But the people who are moderates, the people who are in between, Republicans and Democrats, this is the stuff that matters to them.
There was a story last week, I think it was in Time or Newsweek, and it said it was literally who was the least charitable between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Who's the least charitable? And that's when they were hammering Ted Cruz about donating less than 1% of his income over a 7-year period or 6-year period to charity.
There was also a New York Times story that came out this week saying with Trump's tax returns, there might be some mob ties on that.
How would there be mob ties?
With his buildings. With contractors
so
and concrete.
He'd list the Bent Nose family or something? I mean, I don't understand how the mafia would be on the tax returns.
The way they explained it was for expenses related to his buildings, for pouring concrete and contractors, there were ties to the Lucchese's and the Genovese crime family.
And I think, you know,
he put that on his tax return. It would be fantastic.
I did a quick...
He puts down on his tax return a business expense for dinner with Vinnie Boom Boom Knuckles Genovese.
The Nose. I did a quick Google search. That was Ted Cruz suggesting that on Sunday. Ted Cruz saying that.
And the New York Times also wrote about it? Adam, that's what you saw?
I saw a Times article on it yesterday, yes.
Yesterday. I love the idea that Trump would put mafia ties on a tax return. He needs a new accountant. It's 6:18, make it 6:19. Let's come back in a moment on 720 WGN.
Now, a milestone in broadcasting history.
All the humanity.
A benchmark in the long and legendary story of WGN Radio.
WGN Chicago.
Get ready to be a part of one of the most amazing mornings in radio lore.
The greatest that God ever created.
Steve Cochran's 600th show. It happens in 5, 4, 3, 2. I can't.
Cut, rewind.
I can't fake it.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah. Okay, you know there's going to be blowback.
I know. I'll get 50 emails.
Hey, it's your arm.
Well, that seems about right. Happy 600th show. Thank you for supporting us all the way to the number one talk show in Chicago, and that seems to be about enough celebration for today.
I was going to say, that's today?
That's today. 600 shows. You've done it.
Well, it's radio lore.
Here, congratulations.
Yeah,
get
you
over
too.
Here. Get over
thank
here. Come on, give me a little
awesome.
Of that.
Yeah.
Adam, if you could just be here for Mary and play the role of Mary on our 600th show, all I need you to say is when I say, hey, Mary, it's our 600th show, I just need you to do this. Go, what? Hey, Mary, it's our 600th show. What? There you go. That's pretty solid. That's very, very solid. Kevin, congratulations on producing the 600 shows.
Thanks, Steve. It's a big milestone, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
And Ross, thank you for being my son, but mostly thank you for working for me.
Yeah, no problem.
And, you know, it's the kind of thing that I know you've enjoyed yourself so much over the majority of these 600 shows that,
yeah,
you know, you're locked in. You're not going anywhere.
Of course not.
Yeah, okay. At 624, coming up on 625, we'll get my friend Nick DiGiulio in here. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Congratulations.
600 shows. What a milestone.
It's
what
amazing.
A milestone. It's, you know, there's been a lot of achievements in broadcasting. I don't think any of them measure up to this.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. Screw Tesla.
That's right. Yeah, of the major innovations of this or any other century. I mean, come on. Sure, yeah, you got a cute little electronic car. You got a guy who just spent a year in space. We did 600 shows after I burned the building down. Come on. How are you?
I'm all right, man. How are you? Good?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Doing fine. Doing fine.
Good.
What's happening in show business that we need to be aware of in the coming days or even today?
Well, there's some movies opening this weekend that are pretty forgettable. They're is a sequel to Olympus Has Fallen that nobody asked for.
This is London Has Fallen?
Yes.
Now, I'm confused by the trailer. Is Morgan Freeman the president?
No. No. Morgan Freeman is not the president. Aaron Eckhart is the president.
Okay. And who is Morgan Freeman in this movie?
I believe he is the, I don't know, Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
Or something. The first one was unwatchable, and this one I haven't seen yet, but it's Gerard Butler, who is going to follow up one bomb with another. Because last week he was in Gods of Egypt, and that thing made about $1 and cost, you know, like $150 million.
Seems like ever since he did the Jennifer Aniston's A Hostage movie, he's just made bad movie after bad movie.
It has not stopped, my friend. Seriously.
Wasn't he just shooting one here in town?
I think so. I mean, he makes a movie every 15 minutes. No one sees him.
But, the reason I say that is because I walked out of the studio and he was in the hallway, and
what?
Yeah, and whatever they were shooting, they were using our showcase studio offices as, you know, a green room slash holding place because the trailers weren't anywhere convenient. You can't park a star trailer up on Pioneer Court, so
right.
he was lingering. I think he was in Patty's office. He was lingering down the hall.
What?
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't tell you he was here.
I didn't know he was here at all.
Oh, yeah, you know what? It may have been when you were in New Hampshire.
Oh.
Yeah.
Miss all the good
I think
stuff.
He was here. I always think he was here prepping the place for your 600th show.
Yeah, that was it. I'm sure that was it. Yeah. All right. What other forgettable movies are coming out?
Well, this one is not. I haven't seen it, but Tina Fey's new movie, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which is based on a true story about a journalist who goes to Afghanistan.
And I heard it's okay. No? Not going to be good?
Robert Carlock wrote it. Robert Carlock helped create and wrote many of the episodes of 30 Rock. So, you know, they've worked together many, many times. It's got a pretty good cast. And it's directed by the guys who did Stupid Crazy Love. So, you know, I'm actually looking forward to it. I hope it's better than the last that last fiasco that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler starred in, which was just horrible. I hope it's better than that.
I agree, and I hope it is as well, and I am hearing good things, so I love Tina Fey. Who, by the way, Tina Fey, apparently listening to this show, Tina Fey came out yesterday and said, I hate all the candidates equally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, down with that.
She's really going on a limb with that one.
And let's talk about the most important thing, even more important than the 600 show. Next Tuesday night, you will be where?
I will be at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont screening a digitally remastered print of John Carpenter's sci-fi horror masterpiece, The Thing, with Kurt Russell. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time from my favorite director of all time, John Carpenter. And it's $10 to get it. Parking is free. You can reserve your seats at movico.com, MUVICO. There's a great restaurant on the second floor where we can have some dinner before the movie at Bogart's. You can have cocktails during the movie, and I will give a little talk afterwards about how great and brilliant and awesome the thing is. And I wanted to mention a few Kurt Russell movies that if people haven't seen them. Mm-hmm. Will you have a favorite Kurt Russell performance? Is there a favorite Kurt Russell movie?
You know,
Overboard?
No, not Overboard. No, definitely not Overboard. Why Am I Spacing? The movie he did with Stallone and
Big Trouble in Little China?
No, that's not with Stallone, but that's a great movie.
It is.
You're talking about Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash.
Yeah, I like Tango and Cash.
Wow, that's a weird one to pick. good job, buddy. I
like the young Kurt Russell, the Disney years.
You know. With the mullet?
Yeah.
I like my favorites, besides the stuff that he does with John Carpenter, including The Thing and Escape from New York. I got to say, he's in my favorite comedy of all time. He's hilarious in it, which is Used Cars.
Yeah, Used Cars is a funny movie. Yeah.
Used Cars is still my favorite comedy of all time. But he's great in The Thing, and no one has a better cinematic beard than Kurt Russell in The Thing.
Have you seen Ross Cochran's beard? It's pretty strong.
Wait, Goldie Hawn's a beard? What?
Yeah. No, not Goldie Hawn.
Oh, God, I'm so
confused. No, he's not Goldie Hawn's beard.
I was going to say they've been together forever. This is news, Nick.
This is what happens when you're only a part of the conversation. No, Kurt Russell is not Goldie Hawn's beard.
Oh, thank God.
Kurt Russell has a great beard in that movie.
Yes.
Okay, good, because they're one of my favorite Hollywood couples. And Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon.
Oh, no, that's a beard situation.
What?
No, I'm kidding.
That's also an over situation.
Yeah, for like 5 years.
Yeah.
All right, man. Nice work by you as always. Are you on the radio tonight?
Yeah. Jen Bosworth, the great Jen Bosworth, is going to join me. And then we've got Fly Jams Friday and Straight Out of Context, of which you guys have been making several appearances on every week.
Yeah, we're heavy contributors. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Are.
Chuck
right,
Todd. Chuck Todd coming up from NBC and Meet the Press. 6:31, we do the big story next on 720 WGN.
We're actually told that we have more cameras than they do by quite a bit, so that's sort of interesting. And you know what? That's really in honor of our vets, but they have been. They've been very nice, and they wanted me to go and apologize and everything else, and they did apologize, and they could not have been. But once this started, it's for our vets. There was nothing I could do.
This has got to be a very entertaining show that goes on in Trump's head. I wonder how long it takes to light it. 6:42, CNN reporting this morning that of the alleged $6 million raised by Trump's veterans event in Iowa days before the caucuses, that $800,000 has been collected so far. Now, I'll tell you, I do a lot of charitable events, and it takes a while to collect money, but when the checks are large checks and the event is described and sold the way it was, it should take about 24 to 48 hours. No response yet on the Trump campaign, but as Chuck Todd, the proud proprietor of Meet the Press, joins us. I guess, Chuck, I'd rather start, if you don't mind, with Hillary. Nobody looks forward to going to the orthodontist, so what's this nonsense about how the campaign looks forward to hearing what the email server setter-upper guy is going to say today?
Yeah, exactly. What else are they going to say? You know, if he's got a deal, there's not much they can say. So, of course, they don't want to attack somebody that could turn into a hostile witness for some reason. So, there really is not much else. Look, we'll see. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, you would assume, as somebody who set up the server, he would have understood the circumstances with which it was done, and he would have understood, perhaps have a better explanation of why, you know, why it was done. And was it done, was his job to create the complicated aspect of this, which, look, I always thought that this always looked like an attempt to avoid FOIA, okay, the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
There's no other reason to do it. It is harder to set up a server at your house. This is not more convenient. It's less convenient.
Right.
All right. Who wants to deal with IT problems at their house?
Right.
It's sort of the beauty of work. You want to outsource it to the IT guy at your office.
Yeah, and the IT guy living at your house who you go to say, hey, I know you're watching my TV now, but I got a problem in the bathroom with the server. And he goes, yeah, I can't fix that. I'll get to it tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I mean, it just that's why this has always been. So I think, you know, what does he know about the reasoning behind having this server at her house?
And you know, the TV movie of the week question, right? If you have nothing to hide, then you don't need to ask for immunity. So therefore, the assumption and presumption that there is something to hide is kind of a natural human instinct for the rest of us.
Exactly. And it's pretty, you know, it was the Clinton campaign's trying to portray it as a younger gentleman who's scared of the process, is worried suddenly maybe he did maybe he did do something wrong and he didn't know it. You know, one theory I heard is that, you know, his lawyer spun him up and said, well, even if you didn't knowingly set this up to have as a vehicle to deal with classified information, you could get held accountable. So there are viable explanations I've gotten from Clinton defenders on this that explain why this guy panicked and asked for immunity. But it still looks bad.
Is this going to linger for months?
You say as if it hasn't already.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
well said.
It's lingered. It's going to, you know, it was an interesting story I read today about how some prosecutors feel as if, you know, veteran prosecutors say that the, you know, FBI is basically damned if it does, damned if it doesn't. The closer it gets to the presidential, you know, basically you don't, if there's information to be known that will impact the election, it's not good if you withhold it. At the same time, there's discomfort in having information that can impact the election in a way that maybe you didn't intend to do. So it's a real box that the FBI is in.
I got to do a quick traffic here, but I got to ask you about Romney Fest 2016 later today and the growing chorus of Republicans mm-hmm. who want to say that Donald Trump is not only not my guy, I won't support him no matter how much you waterboard me. Stand by for that. Before we get to that, though, Adam Chappelle, give me a quick traffic update.
On the southbound side of I-57, we have a crash on 119th Street blocking the center lane. As for your travel times, Kennedy, 43 minutes, O'Hare to downtown, Ike, 48 in from Thorndale, Stevenson, an hour in from 355, Dan Ryan, 25 in from 95th. Traffic's brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Stock them on healthy and save today at your local Whole Foods Market. Get fresh asparagus for just $2.49 per pound through Tuesday. Visit Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store. Adam Chappelle, WGN Traffic Central.
Chuck Todd's with us. Meet the Press. You got a plug for Sunday?
Not yet. Still in the
oven.
Mid booking stages. Exactly. Yeah, we're trying to figure that. A bunch of the presidentials are in town Friday and Saturday for CPAC. So we'll see how many of them I can get to show up to my set. So we'll work on that.
There is a insurrection in the Republican Party inside the Republican. You know, it's almost like that old horror movie thing. We trace the call. It's in the House. And the Republican Party infighting, it would be hard to imagine a situation where you go, well, there's our front runner. He's the last guy we're going to support. But that's what's going on.
That's exactly what's going on. And they have 12 days now to do this. And it's a reasonable shot they have of at least getting to a situation where they can deny him a majority of the delegates he needs. But it all begins and ends with making sure he doesn't win Florida and Ohio. If he just wins one of those two states, the math points in Trump's direction. But if they can prevent him from winning both of those states, suddenly the math is a lot more complicated for him. And they will have succeeded in at least step one of their plan, which is to deny him the nomination and hope to start a fight on the floor. But still denying him the nomination if he's the guy with the most votes, the most delegates, even if he's short, that could cause quite the fight. But it is amazing. I've seen this morning there was essentially every independent group that has money that's in the Republican camp has been told run a negative ad against Trump, and it appears that's what they're doing. It is unbelievable the amount of stuff now being thrown at Trump when 6 weeks ago you couldn't find any money being thrown at Trump.
And a lot of people are talking about, well, this isn't going to change anything in any way, shape, or form. People who live and breathe by Trump, I certainly agree with that, but isn't this stuff targeted towards the moderates, the undecideds, and the people that aren't even connected?
Oh, yeah, look, and you know, there's other reasons why it's realistic that they have a shot at stopping him. 8 of the next 13 contests are what are called closed contests. And what does that mean? It means that it's only registered Republicans are allowed to participate. Independents and Democrats can't cross over. And Donald Trump's done really well with independents and Democrats who have decided to come over to his side. And in states that allow that have an open primary, allow anybody to participate, Trump's won by bigger margins. And in places where there have been closed to just registered Republicans, he's the majority of them he's lost. Oklahoma was a closed contest. Iowa was a closed contest. So, you know, and all of a sudden now 8 of the next 13 will be closed. So this weekend, 4 of them are closed. So I'll be curious to see if he loses more than he wins this weekend. that is, to me, a canary in the coal mine.
Chuck, it's interesting that you say that all of these, I guess, wealthy folks are taking out ads, negative ads, spending all kinds of money. We had the incident here with the Ricketts family, of course, spending, you know, $3 to $4 million on negative ads. You've covered this for a long time. Have you ever seen the amount of money being spent to not elect a candidate, or you know what I mean, smear a campaign?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, we saw a lot of money spent against Barack Obama. A lot of money spent against Mitt Romney in general elections, but to see it in a primary is sort of unbelievable. That's what's amazing. This is the type of thing you expect in a general election. You just don't expect this. But we've also never seen anything like this.
Mitt Romney, Congressman Kinzinger will be on with us after 7. He came out very strong. And by the way, he's a Rubio supporter, but he came out very strongly and said, "I won't support Trump under any circumstances." I'll ask him about that again in a few minutes. In the meantime, Mitt Romney is coming out today to do what and say what?
To lay, you know, make the case against Trump, but that's it. I have to say, I feel like there's an ulterior motive behind this. It's sort of like, you know, hey, I'm here in case of emergency. And that's what it feels like, because I can tell you a lot of the campaigns aren't happy with what Romney's doing today. When I say a lot of the campaigns, I mean Rubio, Kasich, Cruz. They think that this is not as helpful as it could be if he endorsed somebody. It's not as helpful as it could be if he would, you know, focus his efforts at you know, trying to throw money, you know, at the problem, you know. So there isn't an enthusiastic reception among the other candidates trying to stop Trump for what Romney's doing today.
Is there anything in Trump's tax return that could be the bombshell that Romney is talking about?
You mean Schedule M for mob? I mean,
come on.
I thought it was the dumbest allocation. I mean, say what you want about Trump. Don't you think if you're dealing with mob money, you don't put that on your tax return?
Of course. Oh, look, I'm putting down as a dependent Vinny Boom Boom Knuckles.
Right. You know, yes, this is it's right there on page 4 of my income tax and Fat Tony Salerno. I mean, it was sort of, I guess, it was the ultimate, you know, we'll make them deny it, you know, type of allegation by Cruz on that one. But who knows what's in it? I mean, that's, you know, I have to say, it's, don't we all hate that kind of politics where you sort of like make them deny it? Well, you know, he never said he didn't sleep with the, you know, the dead carcass. I mean, it was, let's see the return. It's important that people see this stuff. We find out, you know, how much does he try to cut corners? How much, you know, who knows? I think the idea that you're audited every year, that's a red flag to me. You know, you get audited once and you correct it. But if you're getting audited every year, it means you're obviously always trying to cheat on your taxes.
Well, enough about me. The polls that were really less than reliable have seemed to be pretty strong in the last couple of weeks or so. Is there a way for Rubio to come back in Florida, barring things we don't know yet, aside from, and this is funny to me too, teaming up with Ted?
Well, right. Look, I think that Rubio's got a little bit of a struggle in this because he's not running for reelection. There's no Republican office holders, Republican establishment types in Florida. You know, Rubio's not going to be around anymore.
Right.
They have nothing to worry. So, you know, I think that's going to be a challenge for him, that people don't feel the need that they have to support him. I mean, the fact that the governor still hasn't come out. You know, there isn't this fear of retribution in the future because, hey, Rubio's going to be around a while. That's not there, that you saw a little bit with Cruz, right? That's why the governor came out for him in Texas and things like that. So I think that's a little bit of a setback. But I want to go back to something I said earlier about these closed and open primaries. The Florida primary is closed, only to registered Republicans. So I think the polling is overstating Trump. And that's something everybody needs to understand.
It's going to be a very interesting weekend, and I look forward to seeing you on Meet the Press on Sunday. And as always, thanks for the time, bud.
Thanks, Chief. See you, bud.
Chuck Todd, Meet the Press. NBC does a great job with Meet the Press. You got to remember, when Todd took over Meet the Press, David Gregory had just about tubed it. I mean, it was almost over. Thing had huge ratings problems. And Chuck Todd has brought it back, worked his butt off, too. He brought it back. There's a daily Meet the Press thing he does now. And he's just doing a really good job with it.
It's one of the best, I think, one of the best talk shows.
Now, if you
on TV,
of course. If you see Chuck publicly, be nice to him because he's got a twitch. Because he deals with these guys up close and personal way more than anybody else has to. It's more of a flinch than a twitch, I think.
They're chopping off people's heads in the Middle East, and we're afraid to waterboard. Give me a break, George. Give me a break. General Douglas MacArthur and General Patton are in their graves right now. They're spinning in their graves. They don't believe what they're seeing.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
I don't think he's wrong about that. I do think MacArthur and Patton are spinning in their graves. I mean, anybody of a significant position of leadership in the history of America to look at the nonsense that's going on, you'd go, really? Trump? Hillary? Really?
I don't think anybody could have anticipated that.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's what a joke. And you know, for the leading Republican presidential candidate to advocate war crimes, which she does openly, just advocates war crimes, doesn't matter, it makes me sick, really, especially as somebody that's defended the country. It's terrible.
And I appreciate your service. You know that, I bring it up every time you're on. I will also say that a former director of the CIA, who will be a guest on this show coming soon, has actually written a second book, said very recently, if you go with the full scenario here, that Trump becomes president and he advocates killing the families of terrorists, that you would literally have soldiers and special ops stand down in the field.
Yeah, so we have an obligation. It's one of the first things you learn when you get in the military, which is the law of armed conflict. And it's basically, you know, we don't target civilians intentionally, you know, like the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, I mean, et cetera, down the line. And American soldiers have an obligation to disobey illegal war crimes. And even to the extent of, you know, if you're a private in the field and your major or your colonel orders you to do something that is a war crime, you actually bear responsibility. You can't say that, the colonel made me do it. So what the president of the United States or what Donald Trump as wanting to be president of the United States is advocating is a war crime that would force every soldier that did, i.e. killed the relatives of terrorists, tortured regardless of whether or not it worked, things that he's advocated would force all of these people in jail. Now, you have to do one of two things. You either believe that Donald Trump is all bluster, which most people do, but for some reason they like that, or you take him at his word, in which case he is advocating, you know, like what Benito Mussolini did, war crimes.
You are supporting Senator Rubio, but more importantly than that for this discussion, because this is really the discussion of the week with Romney speaking later today, you are one of the first Republicans to stand up and go, look, regardless of the circumstances here, I will not support Donald Trump. Has that changed?
Well, I basically said I can't see myself supporting Donald Trump. I never say, you know, definitively because, you know, who knows in the future. But, no, I have no intention of supporting Trump. If you take him at his word, I've said this. I put my country above my party any day of the week. I'm a Republican because I think the Republican Party for me is the best venue by which to make America strong and successful. Donald Trump is hijacking this party. And, you know, he may make people feel good because he yells and he reflects anger back and he's a WWF wrestler, which he actually is, and he talks like a fourth grader. And for some reason, that's attracting people. But look, as an American, as somebody that knows how serious the office of the presidency is, I can't put my name behind this guy. I don't care if it costs me. You know, I don't care what the cost is. I'm not in this because of my political career. I'm in this because I love my country.
And there's 1,000 examples as to why. But I think a really important point to make is by having an opinion, a strong opinion, that Donald Trump is the worst case scenario to lead this country does not mean that I dislike or have no respect for the person that currently believes in him. All I would ask of Trump followers is to check the facts. If you're of a mind that there are no facts, there's only Trump, then, yeah, I can't convince you. But for those of you who are maybe leaning in his direction, please do your reading. Don't take Kinzinger's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody else's word for it. For the sake of you and your vote and how much it matters, look into everything that's been charged of Trump and see that there's fire where there's smoke.
And you know, that's the point is, yeah, it's not an attack on the followers. All you have to do is go on Twitter. And it's kind of fun for me after I attack Trump and, you know, watch some of the things that are written. I mean, a lot of misspellings, too. But, you know, you look at that and it's like, OK, there are some people that are utterly unable to be convinced. And that's fine. I get that. But there are a lot of people that say, you know, I've got friends and relatives that say, you know, hey, look, I get it. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but I'm just really angry and I need somebody to reflect my anger. I get that, right? I understand it. I think there's better candidates that can not only reflect your anger but show you the way out of the anger. This guy is a con job. I mean, literally a con artist. And I'm not saying it to be mean. I'm saying it because, you know, he's one thing one day, another thing the next. Nobody knows what he believes. And he's wanted to be president since at least 2000 when he almost ran on the Reform Party. This isn't a guy that just felt compelled to get into politics all of a sudden.
Representative, do you think that this is almost, I don't want to say a wake-up call, but maybe a wake-up call to the party that some things need to change within the party and within the system because this is going to be the nominee?
There is a theory of that. There is a theory that this is going to blow up the Republican Party as we know it, and there's a time to do that, and maybe the time is now.
Look, I think that theory may be, you know, it bears some water. I hope that's not the case, but I think there is a time as a party to kind of figure out what it is we stand for, what it is we believe in. You know, look, I don't think that we've done a good enough job of defending what the party has done in Washington, you know, looking at the things that we've been able to stop from the president. People think that we can do more than we can, but, you know, constitutionally, there's not a ton you can do without the president signing something into law. I don't think we've made that case strong enough, and I understand that. And, you know, there's definitely some things we need to change. But the reality of it is, this is a reaction to people being upset about President Obama, President Obama's overreach, his perceived weakness in the world. But it's like this reaction is, I'm so angry, I'm going to cut my own arm off. And that's kind of what we're doing as a party by putting Donald Trump up there versus somebody that I think would be a solid, mature leader, worthy of the greatest statesman in the world.
I only got a short time here, but what are your feelings about the guy you're supporting, Rubio's chances to win his home state of Florida?
You know, I think probably okay. He's not in the best position there now, but there's going to be a lot of focus, a lot of attention, a lot of money spent. And I think Florida's going to see that, you know, the anti-Trump vote's going to have to consolidate behind them. So we feel pretty good, but it's, you know, I'd definitely rather be in Trump's position politically.
Appreciate your time. You want to follow Congressman Kinzinger, it's at Rep. Kinzinger. Bring it positively or negatively, and the congressman responds when you get a hold of his office as well, because his number one concern is where it ought to be on your constituents, right?
That's right. That's right, brother.
All right. Thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, guys. See ya.
It's Congressman Adam Kinzinger. All right, 7:19. We got to get to traffic. We'll talk about that phone call, that interview, and shortly, Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein will join us right now. They're kumbayaing it up in the hallway. /7:23, there's nobody better than Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America, really throughout the galaxy. He joins us now, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com, of course, and the Sunday Spin. You got a plug for that?
Yes, I do. I've got a representative from Voices for Illinois Children will be on to talk about the continuing budget stalemate and how it's really deteriorating a safety net for a lot of at-risk youths. And also, I've got Roger Ruthart from the Moline Dispatch and Rock Island Argus to talk about the Madigan runner proxy war that's going on in some of these legislative primaries.
Yesterday, Rahm Emanuel equated Governor Rauner with Donald Trump. You know, the governor was on last week with us, and I asked him, you know, what happened? What happened to that beautiful friendship? What happened, Peaches and Herb? Can we reunite the two of you? It doesn't sound like, you know, this to me goes beyond politics and we'll be fine down the road. You start throwing one of the most hated guys in America up against the guy that used to be your friend. That sounds like real bad blood to me, not politics.
Yeah, and the thing is that these two, despite their friendship, these two have always kind of had somewhat of an adversarial relationship, but it's only intensified, particularly as it comes to Chicago, the needs of the Chicago public schools, the governor's insistence on his turnaround agenda. And yeah, it really has turned into bad blood. The point that the mayor was making was that, and at first he didn't really even want to answer the question. It was asked, you know, do you compare these two? But he said his view was that he sees in Trump and Rauner that they're both divisive persons rather than bringing people together. And then, of course, the mayor quickly putting a plug for his presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton.
The divisive nature of the state of Illinois politics has been to some extent swept under the rug by the, you know, the bug light that is Donald Trump. So a lack of coverage outside of the fine work you guys have done at the Tribune, what we've tried to do here and what WGN News does as well. You know, if you're not talking about it, you're not covering it, the people aren't hearing about it, and then maybe they're looking the other way. How dangerous is that?
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And we're really, really, really getting to that critical point in Illinois, particularly when it comes to higher education. There were a couple of votes yesterday in Springfield on a plan backed by Democrats but opposed by the governor and Republicans to try to get some money to these struggling smaller public colleges and universities, Chicago State University, Western Illinois University, Eastern Illinois University. That plan failed by two votes on an override of the governor's veto in the House. Another plan will come up today in Springfield, be funded by forgiving a loan that the governor used to help patch budget holes in the previous year's budget. That one does not have the governor's support. It's unlikely Republicans will back that. Democrats will pass it. It'll go to the governor, probably to be vetoed.
We will have a set of grandparents on this show soon who have a grandchild who's specifically been impacted by no funding for a program that the youngster depends upon completely. Those stories are being replicated all over the state. Is there a more obvious tipping point as to when the public is up in arms over this?
Well, I think higher ed may be the tipping point. And yes, you have all of these safety net social services, but for something that's very visible, if you have public colleges and universities shutting down, you know we're at a time where kids and seniors in high school are looking about where to go to school, and you really have to wonder how many of them just staying in state to go to college is not an option for them. The risk is too great. And I think that's when it really impacts in people's lives in a large scale sense. But there's no doubt that the safety net issue is a horrible situation. And we're at the point where you're not going to see a lot of these services that have been cut. The providers aren't going to be there anymore, even when there's any money to restore funding for them.
What are you covering over the next few days so we don't have to?
Well, we're now looking ahead to March 15th and the primaries today in the Tribune. We have our profiles on the three Democrats running for the Democratic U.S. Senate nomination to face Mark Kirk. We're also taking a look at the fact that if you vote a Democratic ballot in the primary in many congressional districts and you're voting for Bernie Sanders and his delegates, you might run into a little bit of a ballot snafu because there's too many Sanders delegates on the ballot, and if you obfuscate your ballot, it'll probably kick out for an overvote.
Is that right?
Yes.
How do they clean that up?
Well, either it's a very complicated issue, but either you can back and cast a full ballot all over again and pick the proper number of delegates, or you just leave the ballot as is and not have those delegates counted in your ballot.
Wow. Musical delegates, maybe? One delegate misses out on a chair, they can't stay and play?
You got it. That's exactly what it is.
The governor, of course, is welcome here at any time, as is Speaker Madigan. Ross, you're producing the show today. Have we heard from Speaker Madigan this morning? No, it sounds very quiet out there. Very, very quiet. Rick Pearson at Wrap 30, Sunday morning at 7 a.m. with the finest thing you're going to hear in politics, the Sunday Spin. He covers it so we don't have to. The campaign from hell continues next. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
729 and 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
This is the 600th show. I haven't heard from Ron this morning. I assume that they've canceled the parade because of the flurries. Eric Adelstein's here. Pat Brady is here as well. Let's get the credits in. Eric, what's the name of your company?
AL Media.
And that's a front for money laundering mostly?
It is, and okay. For hair products.
Excellent. Yeah, I think I saw you at the meeting.
Yeah.
And Pat, what does your company do?
Next Generation Strategies, lobbying and public relations.
Okay. Let's start with the Hillary Clinton side of things, and that is this kid, as she calls it, this cute kid. You know, Bill and I, we had this cute kid come over. He's a little scared. He said the wrong thing. But he has now decided that in exchange for immunity, he's going to talk to the feds. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I don't think it's a huge deal. I mean, I think there was the Clinton campaign is saying this morning they encouraged everyone to cooperate including him. We've now seen the full batch of emails released. It seems as if her contention that she sent zero confidential emails, some of those that ended up in her email box that were then later designated, might have been that. But this seems, again, to be a tempest in a teapot. I don't. There's been no suggestion of national security being violated, of crimes being committed, that it's inconsistent with what Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice did. So I just don't see this as continuing to have legs.
And Prosecutor Brady?
Of course it does. You don't grant somebody immunity unless there is a criminal investigation, not a security investigation, as the Clinton campaign has redefined it. A couple things. Yes, there's been 2,000 emails that have been deemed classified. So at the very least, she's got an issue with that. I think the bigger story is, and that why they got to have this kid coming to testify, is they got to figure out why she set this up. And as soon as that becomes apparent, the next step is probably going to be towards the Clinton Foundation, in my opinion. So I do believe this is a story that will continue.
Clinton Foundation story being what?
Being that this whole thing, Huma, her assistant, was working.
We prefer Uma.
Uma.
EHSN.
Uma, whatever, sorry. Yeah. Was working for the foundation and working for the State Department at the same time. The theory, the conspiracy theory, being that this whole Clinton Foundation, they were using her relationship or as Secretary of State to boost what they were doing at the Clinton Foundation. I mean, it's a pretty slimy thing.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave.
You know that scene in Annie Hall when he's talking about the Kennedy assassination and she says, I think you're using that to cover up for our sexual problems? We're not talking about Trump, are we?
Well, but here's the thing. And you guys are both practiced in the game of politics, and it is a game, for a very long time. If I'm your candidate and I've got stink on me, fair or unfair, and in this case it's the honesty question with Hillary, I want that over immediately. There's going to be people who are never going to believe Hillary Clinton's honest, but I want it done. I want it over now. Instead of letting this linger for months, why hasn't she slash he slash the campaign said, express lane this? I got 15 items or less. I want this out of the way if there's nothing that they don't want revealed.
We've had 25 years of the Clintons. They never do that. Had they done that in the 90s, a lot of that stuff probably would have gone away.
Well, then the trust question is always going to linger.
Their first thing is bunker mentality, you know, lie till you get away with it. And, you know, now they're probably going into the grand jury here the next couple
of
months.
I'm going to go out on a limb, Eric, and say you don't agree with what Pat just said.
Look, I don't. And all the emails have now been released, if I'm reading this correctly. And there's no there. There hasn't been one email that has suggested a law was broken, somebody's security was questioned or compromised, or some secret was revealed. And let me just say this again, let me emphasize it. All the emails that have been designated confidential after the fact, none of them were sent by the secretary. They were sent to her. So this suggestion that there's some nefarious conspiracy or some great crime that was committed, where's the victim and where's the act? It doesn't exist.
The United States of America is a victim when the Secretary of State, whether she sent it or received it, has a legal obligation not to have that information on a private email server that the Russians can.
Why don't we go after Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, too? They did the same thing.
No, they didn't do the same thing. And Colin Powell on Meet the Press said he did not do the same thing. He had a separate email server for himself, but he didn't mix top secret classified information on that particular server. So that's not true that Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice did what she did. She set up a separate server in her house so she could receive emails. Chuck Todd said this morning, likely to avoid freedom of information requests because she didn't want anybody knowing what she was doing. Worst case scenario, there's been national security breaches. So, yeah, it is a serious thing.
But you say that, but there hasn't been any evidence
there's 2,000 emails that have been classified top secret or worse.
That were sent to her.
She's Secretary of State.
They were sent to her. She didn't create the act.
It doesn't
matter.
She read it. It was on her server. She didn't have an obligation at that point as Secretary of State to be able to make the evaluation. That's top secret information.
Well, it was designated as such after the fact.
Doesn't matter. She's secretary. Let me
step back from this. Hillary Clinton may lose this election, sure, because any election's a choice. She's not going to lose it over this issue. I don't believe it.
I was just going to say, do you think voters are caring less and less about the emails? No matter, even if there was some big revelation that comes up now with all of the Trump hoopla?
I think they're more concerned with the size of a candidate's hands right now than they are with this kind of false accusation.
But here's the thing. Flash words matter. And flash words to the general public are investigation, are criminality, are FBI, are security, are things of that nature. People may not want to dig down deep and figure out whether or not these emails had legs specifically.
Sure.
But if it's more trouble related to trust and believability for Hillary, that's a problem for her campaign.
It is a problem. And look, I'm not... the trust issue has been a factor for her. There's no question in this primary season. All I'm saying is I don't believe this whole email.
I just don't think rope-a-dope is going to work this time. I just think it's a bad strategy.
But she's not rope-a-dope. Everything's been released. They're completely cooperating. Everything's being said. So, look, I think it was handled poorly from the beginning. I'll acknowledge that. I think I have acknowledged that on this show.
Yeah.
But I just don't think there's a there.
All right, when we come back, I'm going
to
ask
Eric, I want you to get on the Trump bandwagon like I am.
Trump.
D-R-U-M-P-F.
I think I've almost got you there.
I want to talk about President Trump in just a second. Again, I just threw up my mouth a little bit.
God,
just a little
bit
right
there.
Every
time you say it.
When we come back, is he the Acme? Remember the Bugs Bunny cartoons? Everything was Acme. Is he the Acme bomb to blow up the Republican Party as we know it? Is he the guy? Maybe that's the whole mission. Maybe that's the whole reason he's here. Maybe I drank too much for breakfast. Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady are here. Is he the messenger? Is Trump the guy to blow up the Republican Party, and does the Republican Party need to be blown up? Is that the message, Pat?
I think he could potentially blow it up. I mean, there are a lot of people. We just heard Congressman Kinzinger is not going to support him. I publicly, not that I matter that much, but I would never support him. And I think I probably represent a lot of people that don't want to support him. But I think from the chaos and confusion might come some clarity and a chance to get the party back to what it used to be, which is the conservative party, which talks about how you apply conservative principles to solve people's problems, from crime and poverty and national security and the things that we used to talk about. Now we talk about Donald Trump.
Is he good news for America and Democrats?
No.
Or is he bad news because he could be very bad for America?
Well, I kind of agree with Pat in the clarity thing, and I don't cast this over the entire Republican Party, but there's a wing of the party. Pat Brady is not part of it. That the things that Trump says, and we've said this before, he's just more explicit. This has been an undercurrent in an element of this party, not Pat's part of the party. And sort of this kind of racist, xenophobic scare tactics has been going on a long time. And in some ways, having it transparent and in the open with Trump, maybe it is a cleansing thing and can get out of American politics because it's out in the open. But they're reaping the whirlwind right now. And I don't know where it ends up. The one thing I would say is, and you know, I think it's noble and respectable people like Pat and even Congressman Kinzinger to say they won't support him. But you're going to have major Senate candidates, like let's say a Mark Kirk, Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire and others who may want to run away from Trump. But there has to be a president of the United States. How do you run for the United States Senate and say, I'm not supporting Trump? And then the next question is, well, who do you want to be president? They're not going to say they're for Hillary. I don't think they get to run as a Republican if he's the Republican nominee and get away with just saying, I'm not for Trump. Well, who are you for?
Well, you got some key governor's races as well.
Well, absolutely. You know, too, though, with Kirk, and I agree with that to a certain extent. Kirk had to do that when he ran for Congress, when Alan Keyes, remember Alan Keyes?
Yeah.
That was running here, which probably is an equal disaster to Trump. And
he's the guy that rented the post office box and claimed he lived here.
That was a great move. Yeah. Mark got 40% more of the vote in his congressional district in the 10th, which is a hard one. So I think there's a way to do it. You do have to thread a needle, but let's not kid ourselves. Trump's a disaster for the national ticket. And I've said before, we've made huge gains at the state legislative level, governor level, the House and Senate in the last 7-8 years, and we're going to blow it all with this guy. And the only good thing I see right now is potentially brokered convention, get somebody else, or just start over.
But let me ask this, Pat. You look at the delegate count. It's not that far off right now. Why is it sort of a fait accompli at this point that Trump's the nominee?
I agree. And Chuck Todd was on earlier, and he was talking about Florida and Ohio. We need to stop him there. But you know what? You need to stop him in Illinois, too. There's a lot of delegates here. But it's just, you know, these things are their momentum games. And that's if you really kind of chart it out. But we'll see. A couple good points he made about closed primaries. Illinois is not, but the other
Florida.
Ones are. Florida. And a lot of those angry people, I think, are not just Republicans. They're independents and some Democrats have come over. So in a closed primary, it does make a difference. But
even if you have a broker convention, it's still a disaster for
Oh, it's a train
wreck. It's a mess.
It's a train wreck. Unless somehow somebody like Paul Ryan comes in as the savior. But
Trump doesn't go away quietly at that point either, right? If he wins the majority of the popular vote and a plurality of delegates and they deny him the convention? Oh,
it's a bad.
No, there's no real good other. The only saving grace is that the Democratic candidate is weak. and it's not attracting a lot of enthusiasm. And that's our really our only hope. But if Trump's the nominee, we do not win. And if, it'll be tough otherwise.
If Trump's the nominee, Pitt, do you see, I guess, negative implications for, say, the Mark Kirks and the others who are going to be the other Republicans who are
sure,
going to be on
the ballot? Sure, because in Illinois, as Eric knows, the presidential turnout is completely different than the non-presidential year turnout. Last time Mark won in 2010, it was a non-presidential year. It was a good year for Republicans. But he always overperforms what people think he's going to do. But Mark's somewhat unique. Not everybody can do that.
The governors and Senate races aside, we still have the Supreme Court question. It's ridiculous that the sitting president of the United States can't name a nominee that the Republicans would act on. It's another example of the circular firing squad that the Republican Party has become. They're talking about a judge from Iowa as a possibility. She doesn't appear to be a candidate that would be passed through very easily, but she also doesn't appear to be a candidate that would be such an obvious choice the Republicans look ridiculous by turning her down. Are you guys hearing anything about Judge? It's Judge Kelly, I think, isn't it? Is that her name? Jane Kelly, is that right?
I believe it's Kelly.
Being in Chicago, I'm always for Irish judges.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah.
When you get those parking tickets,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
70% of the vote.
Because the thought would be Obama would pick somebody that's a slam dunk. The Republicans right. have to agree or they're just playing politics. This doesn't appear to be that kind of person.
I mean, there have been a lot of names floated. I think, early on, there was this talk of people who'd already been confirmed by the Senate.
What about Lynch, the Attorney General?
Loretta Lynch. I mean, 97-0, the Senate approved her as Attorney General. The problem is then you have an Attorney General confirmation fight as well as a Supreme Court fight.
At the same time that she's contemplating the decision on whether
That's
or not
right.
to take the referral from the FBI on the email gate.
It's a little bit weird, but I do think there's other appellate court level judges that the Senate, with Republican votes, have approved Obama recommendation. So, look, I think the McConnell overreached, a huge mistake tactically. It made it just reinforced the obstructionism. I mean, you can wait till the nominee's picked and then pick them apart. But this notion of, they're just across the board, doesn't matter who he nominates, we're not going to consider it. I think it was tactically stupid.
And plus, there's a billion ways to kill a nomination.
Right.
You could stretch it out and never have to talk about it.
Right.
Mark Kirk, give him credit, was the only one that said, no, we're going to let this go.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's your constitutional duty. And again, this is no slam on anybody that believes one way or another, but it's part and parcel to the reason the far left and the far right are the problem and not the solution. Take a breath. Take a step back. You can't say you honor the Constitution and then say, unless it's something I don't want you to do. And that's what the Republicans are saying.
Who knows? He might get the Democratic equivalent to Souter. So you never know how these guys turn out.
I'd take Judge Judy at this point.
I mean, look at all the Nixon appointees that became very moderate, almost liberal judges by today's standards. So,
I agree. It was bad.
How about
bad
this?
Politics.
How about this? The Republican Party decides no matter what happens with Trump, he's out. Trump sues, because I don't know if you heard, he's really popular of suing. It goes very quickly up the ladder to just short of the Supreme Court. It gets into the Supreme Court, but we don't have a new nominee yet. We're tied at 4-4, and it gets kicked back up to a lower court decision. Then who decides who's president of the United States?
Eric,
I don't know.
Eric and I do. We'll
I'll
figure
be
it out here.
Toronto.
No, we got it. We know a guy. We'll figure it out.
Before you guys leave, let me check in with Ross on the poll. The question was a question of trust.
Yes.
Who do you trust the least?
Yes.
What were my choices?
Bernie Madoff, O.J. Simpson, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton.
And who are the leaders?
With 22 votes cast, Donald Trump is polling at 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton at 23%.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Madoff, the guy who swindled life savings, is at 18%. And O.J. Simpson, the murderer, is at 10%.
So Trump and Hillary are trusted less than O.J.
and
Bernie Madoff.
Money swindler,
Ladies and gentlemen, America 2016. So, and by the way, if you don't think 22 votes is enough to matter, that's currently what they use as a base for all the polling. 22 people. It's 8:01. We'll come back with more in a moment. I want to thank Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. And you guys, as usual, a group hug before you leave.
See you. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Back after this on 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. Dean Richards standing by Channel 9. Dean, this is a very big day.
I know.
Very big day. As a matter of fact, I believe we spent a lot of money on a special announcement that you're going to hear right now.
I can't believe you spent a lot of money.
No. A milestone in broadcasting history.
Oh, the humanity.
A benchmark in the long and legendary story of WGN Radio.
WGN Chicago.
Get ready to be a part of one of the most amazing mornings in radio lore.
The greatest that God ever created.
Steve Cochran's 600th show. It happens in 5, 4, 3, 2...
All right, who am I kidding? Nobody cares. All right, Dean, so how are you?
Impressive, though.
Yeah. We wanted to spend a lot of money on the production element, not actually do anything to pump up the show.
And blew the whole budget right there.
Yeah.
Did you catch Trump saying you're the greatest? Does that change your mind at all?
Yes. No, of course it does. Of course it does. 600 shows, Dean. Today is show number 600, and boy, you could cut the tension with a knife, couldn't you?
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's quite a milestone.
Have you had a 600th show at any other point in your career?
Yeah, once previously here. I think it was 2004. The 600 shows I'm counting are just since I came back. This is Steve Cochran Part 2. Steve Cochran 2.0. I mean, I did 10 years here before. So that's what, 2,000
right.
shows?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you act like it wasn't special for you.
It was.
Sorry.
I have a cold.
Yeah, well, whatever. Sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks, the hour is indeed is sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center and maybe a big bottle of Ginkgo Biloba. Doesn't remember the first 10 years. Believable. It's an outrage.
Look, know, I ran into somebody yesterday who, where was I, at the grocery store someplace. Hey, oh, Dean Richards. Hey, I love you guys every morning on WGN. Oh, thank you. Give it to that Cochran.
I love when people don't even use my name. It's that Cochran. There's nothing good that can be said if you use it in that way.
Give it to that guy.
Give it to that Cochran. Hey, that Cochran. You know, that's not good. All right. So listen, here's what we know about divorce. If you're going to get divorced, it happens. It happens to people all the time. Don't put your kids in the middle. How stupid are Madonna and Guy Ritchie over this?
Well, this is a custody thing that's the custody terms of their divorce from 2008 were settled long ago. But recently, their 15-year-old son, Rocco, who legally is supposed to be living with Madonna, said he didn't want to live with Madonna because, you know, she's on the road a lot. You know, it's you're a 15-year-old boy growing up. There's metal brassieres laying all over the house.
Yeah, it'll mess you up.
That'll mess you up a little bit. So
I mean, especially if they don't fit.
He mostly did not want to go on the road with his mother. He said, I would rather stay in London with my father, director Guy Ritchie.
Why is that a bad thing?
Yeah, well, because it's not in Madonna's favor, I guess. I guess it's because it's not that's not what the custody terms are. So Guy Ritchie went to court. A judge in New York said you have to follow the terms of the custody. The boy simply refused to go back to New York. And so, you know, a legal battle blew up yesterday, and these two have been fighting about this about since Christmas time. Yesterday was the first time that they had any sort of agreement. Attorneys on both sides said that for now, it's in the best interest of the boy to let him stay in London, let him go to school, let
Jay,
him
do, you think?
Do you know, do all of that, and the attorneys can, you know, battle the rest out later on.
It just, you know, it just goes to show you, divorce makes people so stupid. Because Guy Ritchie and Madonna have all the money they need.
Yep.
They ought to be able to figure out a way to do what's best for the kid, whether he's 5 or 15 or whatever, and they're having this idiotic fight.
Absolutely.
Knock it off.
No question.
When we come back, exciting David Hasselhoff news. I got to check my definition of exciting. Fuller House news. And Dean's running contests like Wink Martindale. There's a reference you only get if you're over 50.
Joker, Joker, Joker.
Maybe 40 or 30 in your case.
30, there you go. You can travel Chicago.
You'll be calling his name. What? Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards.
You know.
Is Andre working blue, Dean? What was that?
What did I just hear?
This is what that says. I didn't misread it.
Read it again.
This week on Chicago's Best, it's all about those little round delights to satisfy some big appetites. Join Brittany and Elliot for Chicago's Best Balls.
Maybe they mean meatballs, but why wouldn't they say meatballs? But
and take a look at your junk.
Ross had a good point, though. Ross, why don't you share with the class what
you just said? I mean, the good news is that it's best balls, not worst balls.
Who writes these?
I don't know.
Who writes these at Channel 9?
I believe that's their creative services department here.
Well,
apparently
they got a little bit of the Bob Collins whiskey in the drawer.
It's probably Jeff Hoover.
So anyway, Chicago's Best Balls, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
I'm going to stay up late to watch.
Set the DVR.
Got to say what you got to say to get viewers. That's what I'm saying. Same thing with listeners. All right, David Hasselhoff news. You know that I have long been president of the Chicago edition of the David Hasselhoff
right.
fan club.
That's right.
I have all the David Hasselhoff outfits. I wear them in my private time. And David Hasselhoff, I have a tree fort that people come up
with. Yep. Hasselhoff, well, for the meeting. Geranimals. I've seen those.
Yes. And whenever I'm drunk, I like to eat a hamburger, just like David Hasselhoff did in that famous viral video. So what is he doing?
He's going to be in the, you know, they're making a new Baywatch movie.
Oh, good.
With,
I mean, yeah, I know.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson is going to be starring, and Zac Efron, and, you know, lots of hot young new.
Sir Laurence Olivier.
Right. I'm sure there'll be probably.
Is Meryl Streep in this Baywatch movie?
Meryl Streep is not in this one.
It's okay. Yasmin Bleeth.
As it turns out. But they just announced yesterday that David Hasselhoff will be part of the new Baywatch movie.
Well, how do you do a Baywatch movie without the Hoff?
Without the Hoff.
Come on.
Exactly. The Rock put an Instagram video where he's talking to his iPhone. It's like, what? You're going to be in the, you are going to join us for sure? Then he holds the screen of his iPhone to the camera, and you can see it's David Hasselhoff's face saying, yes, I'm going to be in the movie.
Well, it's pretty exciting, but it's...
It's a really slow day in entertainment.
Wait, we're not even through it yet. Fuller House gets another season.
Yeah, this thing...
this is going to be very big news for Mark Carman and for Adam Hogue. Adam Hogue was waxing nostalgically about
watching... They're going to say waxing his eyebrows.
Waxing something. Waxing nostalgically about
Chicago's best.
Watching Full House as a little kid.
Yeah, some people are totally into it, but even people who were into the original 80s, 90s sitcom Full House, when they saw the reunion show Fuller House that debuted, it was like last week or the week before, something like that, on Netflix, pretty much everyone agreed it was pretty awful.
Oh, is that right?
It's gotten terrible reviews, but yesterday Netflix announced that they have signed up for a second season. So they've renewed it. There's going to be more of it. I guess it's different on, you know, sort of these on-demand kind of shows and online shows.
Well, I wish they would have, you know, updated it a little bit because, you know, Netflix, you can still have family entertainment, obviously. But the grown-up cast of Full House, wouldn't you want to see them more like a Desperate Housewives or a Real Housewives kind of a thing? And maybe a senile Joey. Was it Joey?
Joey.
The best friend.
Right.
Yeah.
The best friend. Of course, he acted sort of senile before. Maybe one of them is running a drug cartel of some kind.
Have we learned nothing from the Kardashians?
Right. Random violence.
Yeah.
Things like that. All right, now what are these contests you're running?
Oh, we've got a couple of huge contests coming up. First of all, wouldn't you like to go to New York to go to the world premiere of the new Divergent movie?
Can I go to New York and not go to the movie?
No, you have to go to the movie.
It's I would go.
Part of the deal.
It's an okay movie.
Yeah, it's a red carpet premiere.
I like that kid. What's the star's name? Haley Joel Osment. No, that's somebody else.
He's not in that.
No, the girl from the Clooney divorce movie.
Well, Shailene Woodley.
I like Shailene Woodley.
She's the star of it. And this is
your dad, or her grandfather, actually, was a famous UCLA coach, Coach Woodley.
Really? You don't know what you're saying.
All right, so how do I win the trip to New York?
So it's a trip to New York for the red carpet premiere, blah, blah, blah. You have to enter today before noon, wgntv.com/contest for that. But wait, if that's not your cup of tea, you could also win, completely separate contest, tickets to join me at the... premiere of West Side Story at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. You know, we do
that would be easier.
These Dean's Night Out things where we go and see a play together at the Paramount. We get all liquored up right before the show.
Sure.
They have like a little buffet, you know, and we eat stuff and drink and then try to stay awake during the show because we've eaten or drank too much.
Can we have a choreographed gang fight outside the studio just like in the movie? What are we, jets or what are the other?
Sharks.
Sharks.
Yeah.
You want to be a jet or a shark?
I think I would rather be a shark.
How about you're a shark, I'm a jet, and I jump you? And that way I could say I jumped a shark.
You are on a roll today.
Just trying to pad this segment out.
Steve took his Henny Youngman pills today. So anyway, if you want to enter this contest and join me for our next Dean's Night Out, which will be March 20th, I think it is. All the details and the way to enter at WGNradio.com/contest.
WGNradio.com.
So either way.
I'd go to the WGNradio.com.
Win,
screw the
win,
trip
win.
To New York. Yeah. So. And then Sunday, you'll be at Presidential Towers.
Yeah, with the big American Lung Association tower climb.
Yeah.
Is this coming Sunday.
Featuring Dave Ennett's team.
Featuring Dave Ennett's team.
Ennett exactly. To win it, which will have some Channel 9 people on it.
Dave is going to be joining us on, we're going to be doing the whole program, the Sunday morning show live from Presidential Towers. Dave will be on the show. We've got a lot of special guests who are going to be joining us on the show. So it's going to be fun. And as I promised on my show last Sunday, I'm just trying to take a page out of the Donald Trump popularity book. If you come out there, I'll be happy to insult you right to your face.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good for you. And it doesn't matter what the insult is, you'll customize it, right?
No, custom insults for anyone who would like them.
So, tall, skinny, fat, short, disabled, rich,
ears. I'm going to be looking especially for big ears because he was big on that the other day.
Yeah, big ears. And sweaters. Not the sweaters you wear, but people do sweat.
If you perspiration kind of sweat.
And you would think in that stair climb there'd be a lot of material there, right?
Yeah. Hello. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's going to be a lot of stink jokes. Yeah.
It's going to be great. Hey, listen, tomorrow on the show, when Dean's on, we'll have stuff to talk about. But today, I thought you did a nice job of padding the segment out because we really had nothing.
We really had nothing today.
Well, nothing going on.
Yeah, really. Thank goodness for the Chicago's Best promo because that killed like a minute.
There
yeah, no doubt. And thank God Madonna and Guy Ritchie are fighting over their child.
And I do mean kill.
And thanks for not talking about Kendall Jenner eating McDonald's naked.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
What?
Come again?
There's a what? There's a picture of her. What? You buried the lead like this? What? There's a picture of her on the web eating a McDonald's sandwich.
Yes.
The sandwich looks delicious. She's topless.
Yes.
Why?
Because how many times, Steve, have you taken your shirt off and had a quarter pounder?
Well, a lot. That's the David Hasselhoff thing. But, I mean, here's the ultimate truth about the Kardashians. They have made naked less interesting. You know, from Kim all the way down to her little sister. I have no interest in seeing any Kardashian, including Bruce Jenner, naked. None of them.
And take a look at your junk.
Bruce Jenner, this just in. Bruce Jenner got his own locker at his country club yesterday. There was an issue about, do we put him in the men's locker room? Do we put him in the ladies' locker room? I'm not really sure what it was because I wasn't interested enough to read the story.
right.
But I did see the headline that he got his own locker.
Why
hasn't
Trump and Hillary addressed this? That's fantastic. All right, I'll talk to you later.
If there's anything else, I'll break right in.
Yeah, do call, won't you?
Okay.
That's Dean Richards. We'll take a break. We'll come back in just a moment, and we'll get you the big story.
And I say you!
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
841. Patty Vasquez coming up in just a few moments. Live from San Diego, courtesy of our friend David Hochberg and Pearl Mortgage, who sponsored the trip to go find out what it's like to be a Marine. That's what Patty and Mark Carmen and Jackie Paulus, our Vice President, Hoo-Ha of Promotions and Marketing, and Shanae, who does a great job with our video and digital stuff. That's what they're all doing out there.
Now, did they have to go? They had to go through the intense training, right? They had to go through.
That's what they are actually doing. They're doing. I think that's what they're doing.
There's some videos on our website, WGNradio.com. You can see Mark Carmen running down a field with another man draped over his shoulders. One of the workouts they were doing.
Is that from San Diego, or was that before he left here?
I believe it was a workout they were doing.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I was clear and understood. Tonight is another Republican debate. The schedule's crazy. The Republican debate tonight, there's a Democrats debate on Sunday night, and then I believe there's another Democrats debate next Wednesday, and then another Republican debate next Thursday.
As if you couldn't have enough.
Between Sunday and Wednesday, what's going to be new between Hillary and Bernie?
That's a great question. That's a really good question.
So we were going to talk to a guy named Larry Connor?
Cohen, sorry. He's the chairperson of Labor for Bernie.
There's an event in Illinois this week for unions and representing the viewpoints of Bernie Sanders. Larry, the chairperson for Labor for Bernie and the former international president of the CWA, he's now missed his window, unless that's him right there. So Larry should be joining us in just a second. And one other sports note for the day. Remember the expensive pig that Ioannis Cespedes had, the Mets guy that's been driving fancy cars into camp every day?
Yeah.
And Ioannis Cespedes plans to eat his $7,000 pig that he bought.
Yes, it was sent to the butcher yesterday, so it'll be turned into some delicious pork chops, bacon, and all that good stuff.
I mean, I would assume that was the destination to begin with, probably, right?
Yeah, it just wasn't confirmed. It is confirmed now the pig will be slaughtered and then consumed.
Meanwhile, Joe Madden was on PTI and ESPN yesterday afternoon talking about the 70s dream van that he found that he drove onto the Cubs field. You think about it, a 1976 van who was like from Joe Madden's you know, late teen years, early 20s years. There's no one currently playing for the Cubs who was alive then by a long shot. Oh,
that's true.
Right? Even the Lester. How old's Lester?
Lester's 30.
Yeah, so that's 86.
How old's the catcher? Who's the catcher who this is his last year?
If you're 35, you were born in 81, so this van's nostalgia to everybody on the team.
Yeah. Well, Joe Madden's driving his van onto the baseball field. The New York Mets manager, Terry Collins, not as thrilled. He says, playtime's over, kids, after some of Cespedes' acts these past week over at spring
All the fancy cars he's driving in.
I know, that's pretty cool.
So, Larry Cohen's chairperson for Labor for Bernie and the former international president of the CWA. What is candidate Sanders doing with Labor, sir?
Good to be with you. Well, I'm here in Lansing, Michigan. We just did a press event with Bernie and workers who have experienced firsthand the trade regimes of our country for several decades, solely on trade here in Lansing. And what Bernie's doing in terms of working people is what he's done in his entire life. He's walked with us in every sense of that word, whether it's on these failed trade deals. Yesterday, I was in Chicago at Nabisco in front of the plant with workers there, some that had been there for decades, some that have been there only recently, faced now with the loss of their jobs, while Nabisco, headquartered nearby in Deerfield, seems to think, you know, that's just the way you do business in America. So, you know, whether it's on trade or whether it's workers' rights or whether it's our kids going to college without being broke for the rest of their lives, he walks with working people.
What's the plan specifically to organize labor that Bernie Sanders would do his best to institute as president?
I think it starts with trade because the president doesn't control much in our balanced constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, most policy, is very much up to what Congress will do or won't do.
Mm-hmm.
Trade is the president's. The president appoints the U.S. Trade Representative. The president initiates with the Secretary of State every trade deal. And so I think the devastation of decades of NAFTA and CAFTA, the trade relationship with China, the PNTR, the Columbia Trade Agreement, the Korea Trade Agreement, I think changing that is something the president directly controls. And I have no doubt that Bernie Sanders will change it.
Larry, Illinois is the only state without a balanced budget. What would his advice be to advance labor here?
Well, I think that's a good question. I don't want to make up what that advice would be. I could say to you that part of the problem in Illinois, from my point of view, is the state government and the inability to balance the budget with fair taxes, where everybody pays their fair share. But I don't want to claim to be an expert on Illinois.
Last question before we let you go, because it's been so prominent in the news over the past several months, but certainly it's been buried lately by all the bluster of the campaign. Where is Bernie Sanders on the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Bernie Sanders has opposed it from the beginning, opposed Fast Track for it, just spoke on it and said, how do we ask workers in Chicago or here in Detroit or Flint to compete with workers in Vietnam, where the minimum wage is 65 cents an hour and there are no workers' rights? That's not what our country should be about. For a multinational company, moving work there, as one CEO said to me, it's like gravity. We go where the costs are less, and so the profits can be higher. It's not necessarily their fault, although we blame Nabisco in that case. It's that we don't have trade policy. We've had foreign policy that masquerades as trade policy.
Good luck on the trail. What's the website you want to send people to?
BernieSanders.com or LaborForBernie.org.
All right. Enjoy your day, Mr. Cohen. Thank you. You know, it's almost like, you know, you see TV shows where you go, we present this with limited interruption. That's the limited interruption part for me. You know, I just look. Bernie Sanders seems like a wonderful guy. I don't know him. I've never met him. But there are certain trade agreements that it will be nearly impossible to unwind. And, you know, a good portion of what candidate Sanders stands for is that big business is relatively evil. Well, big business employs a lot of people. And in the same way you can't paint all white folks and all black folks the same way, I honestly don't think you can paint all big business the same way either.
And I say you!
Including Wall Street. I mean, there's some bad guys on Wall Street, to be sure. And there's some people on Wall Street that ought to be in jail for 2007 and 2008. But a lot of what Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, wants to do is frankly, pie-in-the-sky stuff and probably has about as much validity as in regards to getting accomplished as the nonsense that Trump is talking about. So, in other words, Hillary's lying, Bernie's foolish, Trump's got his head up his butts. We're having some trouble reaching Patty Vasquez. As far as we know, maybe doing disciplinary push-ups with the Marine Corps right now.
I'm just picturing G.I. Jane. Remember with Demi Moore? And she had to shave her head, and they were putting her in the rowboat and everything.
That was different than Striptease, right?
Yeah.
Those are two different movies?
Yeah.
Sponsored now. Here's what we'll do instead, because the Hawks beat Detroit last night. Who doesn't want to hear the highlights? Sponsored now by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Here's your Hawks replay.
Chicago Blackhawks renew their oldest rivalry tonight here in Detroit. Teuvo Teravainen leads a 3-on-2 rush over the red wing line, right wing. Hit the trailer. Gustafson to Seabrook, right circle. Shoots, he scores! Brent Seabrook with a bomb from the top of the right circle. Beats Mrazek cleanly. And with his 13th goal on the season, that's another new career high for Brent Seabrook. It's 1-0 Hawks. To Keith, left point. To Seabrook straight away. High slot. Down to Kane. Over to Panarin. Shoots. He scores! Tic-tac-toe passing. Seabrook from the line to Kane. Bottom of the right circle. Fed it through the top of the crease. And Panarin all alone in the left circle. One time didn't pass. Mrazek. Power play goal. 2-0 Hawks. And Abdelkader will skate to the wing bench. Hit by... He hits Seabrook, but Seabrook moves the puck to Kane over the wing line. Left circle. Shoots. He scores! Second period and lead the Wings 3-0. To Green out the right point. But down to Tatar along the right boards. Back to Green at the line. To Richards at the left point. Moves down and fires. He scores. Former Hawk Brad Richards drove that one right along the ice. It was a good screen in front of Corey Crawford. And with a power play goal, the Red Wings are on the board. Connick holds the puck. Gave it on the half boards to Ladd. To the high slot, Seabrook to the left point, Key fires, blocked in front, the rebound, Panic fires, save, rebound, score! From the
Andrew
side
Ladd.
Of the Red Wing net, it's Andrew Ladd with a loose puck. He ends up sending it in behind Mrazek, and the Hawks get a three-goal lead back at 4-1. Welcome back to Chicago, Andrew Ladd. The other way through center ice, crossing the wing line on the right wing, center across left circle. Panarin shoots, he scores his second of the night. A no doubter by Artemi Panarin. He ripped that one from the left circle past Mrazek with Kane assisting. It's now 5-1 Hawks with 5:22 left in the third. Face off to the left of Crawford, won by the Wings. A shot from Nyquist from the top of the right circle beats Corey Crawford. They score. 3 seconds left, 2-1. Erhoff's got the puck behind the Hawk net, and the horn sounds, and this one's over. And the Blackhawk fans that are here inside the Joe Louis Arena all on their feet, standing and applauding the Chicago Blackhawks, who came in here tonight in search of a win to try and take control of the Central Division, and they did. They beat the Red Wings 5-2. And on the season, the Blackhawks hit the 40-win mark. Their record now 40-20-5.
There you go. And nobody better than John Weideman and Troy Murray with the call of every Blackhawks game. Next hour, Brian Dennehy, the legend, Richard Quest on his new book on missing Malaysian flight MH370. And stories I hope to get to, an app that Icelanders use to keep from dating each other if they're relatives. It's the incest prevention app. Also, caffeine in your pocket, a new carryable caffeine, not a drink, like a little snack caffeine, another boost, and a blind seeing eye goat, a blind goat and its pal, the seeing eye goat, which spends the entire day helping the blind goat around.
Does this have anything to do with the Cubs curse?
No.
Okay.
But they do a lot of Stevie Wonder goat numbers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we found Patty Vasquez. She'll join us in about 10 minutes or so. Yesterday, news came up that a missing piece, or at least a possible missing piece of missing flight MH370 had washed ashore. And I believe in Northern Africa.
Yes, by Mozambique, I believe.
The book, The Vanishing of Flight MH370, is by Richard Quest, who, if you watch CNN ever, is a distinctly fascinating guy and an aviation expert, amongst other things, along with the financial world. But anyway, the true story of the hunt for the missing Malaysian plane. And Richard joins us now. Richard, I'm a fan. You know that. We've talked before. But congratulations on finishing this book.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, and it was, I have to say, everybody said it was difficult to write a book. And it was one of the most difficult things that I've done.
It is very, very, it's not just time consuming. You want to get it right, especially in a case like this, even though you deal in this world all the time. This story was just number one for us until Trump showed up, number one for us nonstop. And the idea is, and I think you'd agree with this, Richard, the frightening thing is, and why we're so wrapped up in this, we go, well, that could have been us. And how does a plane fall out of the sky, which you talk about specifically in the book? They don't do that.
Not only could it have been us, but 2 years later, Steve, we've got no idea really where it is. We think we know roughly, but we've got no precision. And worse, we have absolutely no idea what happened. And when I say that, I'm not just giving the journalists hyperbole, but I've looked at this upside down, backwards and inside out. We do not know what happened to that plane and why it went missing.
It is devastating, not just to the families. It's devastating to the CEO of that airline and the people involved in that airline who try to get you safely from point A to point B. Because one of the things that was initially brought up is, well, it's Malaysian Airways. I mean, they're probably not paying much attention.
Not true. I mean, not true in the sense that Malaysia Airlines has been around for decades,
right.
50, 60 years. So, and it had, until these two incidents, 17 when it got blown out of the sky and 370, the airline had a superb
right.
safety record. And not only that, I mean, it's a well-established, well-trained, well-run aeronautically carrier. However, like all airlines in the world, it has been nutcrackered between the Gulf carriers, Emirates, Qatar, and Etihad, and the low-cost carriers like EasyJet, Tiger, and Jetstar, and it was finding it very difficult. Now, there were issues on the night, no question. The airline didn't perform well. The Malaysian government didn't perform well on the night. But this goes to the heart of a global industry. And that, Steve, is why we're so fascinated by this.
The book is called The Vanishing of Flight MH370. It's Richard Quest. Let's start with the news of yesterday. This missing, is it a tail fin? I don't even know what the proper term for it is that washed ashore.
It's the bit at the back of a plane that looks like a wing. It's known as the horizontal stabilizer.
Okay.
And they believe that's where it comes from. The problem is the texture. It's not really thick enough to have been from a 777. And secondly, there are some views that say the wording no step, a warning to mechanics not to step on it during maintenance, that lettering would normally be bigger. So there are those who believe it's a smaller plane. The first question that the Australians are going to have to answer, because Mozambique is sending it to Australia, firstly, is it from a plane? Secondly, is it from a 777? Thirdly, is it from MH370? And you answer it in those three orders, because the first is pretty much yes. The second, they'll be able to tell quite quickly. The third, you may end up having to do by a process of deduction, Steve, because if there's no number and there's no serial number and there's no markings on it, you're left saying, well, as far as I know, there's no other 777 that's been missing this. Therefore, and it's in the right place. Therefore, we have to say it's from that plane.
Richard, if this is in fact determined to be a piece of the fuselage from MH370, could it lead to answers as to what happened, or is this a part of the plane where you really wouldn't know what did happen?
This is the saddest part of the answer I have to give. No, it's not going to tell us anything like that. Remember last year we had the flapper on, which was a very substantial piece of the plane. It was found off Reunion Island. That didn't tell us. It sort of vaguely says you're in the right ocean, and it sort of vaguely says you're in the right part of the ocean, but it doesn't tell you what happened. We need the black boxes, the flight data recorder, the cockpit voice recorder. They are the only way that we will ever find out what happened at 1:19 on March the 8th, 2014, when that plane suddenly went dark, the radios stopped, the plane turned round, and we never heard another word since.
6 hours it flies south. There's been a million conspiracy theories about it. Of all the time you've spent on this, including putting together this book, The Vanishing of Flight MH370, do you have an educated opinion as to what that six-hour period was like?
Well, let me ask you first of all. I'm going to turn the table. It's very hard to take an interviewer and turn him into an interviewee. Eventually,
I understand.
I go back to my roots.
I get it.
What do you think happened? Do you think it was the pilots? Do you think it was mechanical? Do you think it was some government that took it over to protect some secret technology?
No, my feeling is there was something catastrophic that went on in the cockpit that caused the pilots to have a problem where they could no longer fly the plane, and then the plane did what it did. I mean, to me, there has to be an end story to a conspiracy, and 2 years down the road, if it was terrorism, if it was some other reason to have it, we would know more than we know.
And I agree with you, and I agree fully on that, and nor do I think it was pilot suicide, because I've looked at all the cases in the book of pilot suicide, particularly last year, Andreas Lubitz, German mm-hmm. Wings, the plane flies into the Alps. You know, pilots, when they commit suicide, they get the other pilot out of the cockpit, and they put the plane into a nosedive. They don't start fiddling with the transponder and switching it off, and you know, in some sort of almost Batman-esque, we're going to make it as complicated as possible for you to die. No, they don't do that. They do it quickly in the course of a deranged mind. And there's no evidence, and this is crucial to my mind, serious evidence that says either pilot, particularly the captain, did it.
You have a chapter in the book called Never Again. And while we would hope that this could never happen again, there's no way to guarantee that it won't, obviously. But what do airlines, what have they learned, if anything, from this?
They've learned that they have to reduce the gap from when a plane tells you where it is. Over the oceans where there's no radar, at the moment they report every more than 20-30 minutes. Under international rules, that's coming down to 15 minutes. It's not enough. A plane can fly a long time. If a plane has just reported and then 14 minutes later goes missing, a lot of space can have been flown.
Sure.
With Air France 447, it was only 4 minutes since the last report, and it still took them 2 years to find it in the South Atlantic. They need to do that. There needs to be data streaming of the black box data. So, yes, it may take you a long time to find the bodies and the remains of those on board, but if you stream the data from the black box, at least you know what has happened. And there is technology available. It's not been installed properly yet on many aircraft. That's the future.
Richard Quest, The Vanishing of Flight MH370, The True Story of the Hunt for the Missing Malaysian Plane, CNN aviation correspondent, and also a talk show host himself. Who plug your CNN show. When are you on?
I'm on CNN International every day, 4 o'clock. Quest means business.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that someday soon as we continue.
We
continue. We're going to take, Richard, I think you'd be interested in this, a friend of mine, former BBC, is going to give us the British citizenship test tomorrow because because considering where our country's headed, we just want to tell the Queen we're sorry and ask if we can come back.
So if you're taking that test, brush up. I'll give you one tip here,
all right,
because I've seen this test. I've seen versions of it. Brush up on the other countries of the United Kingdom, particularly Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, and the assemblies and parliaments. And once you've been once you're a citizen of Her Majesty, we'll have a cup of tea.
Very good, my friend. Thank you, Richard Quest at Richard Quest on social media. And I know what everybody's thinking. Everybody's thinking he's going to put a puck in his pants. No, he's a journalist. We can't ask him to do it.
No.
As far as you know, 919, we'll take a break and come back on 720 WGN. .924, Steve Cochran, at Patty Vasquez, CHI on social media. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning. Wow. I just experienced something incredible that very few people ever get to witness. The completion of the Crucible. We were at the Reaper for the Marines, the final phase of their training. These recruits are now officially actually Marines. So I'm sorry. I started to jump right into it, but I'm so excited.
Well, you're excited about it. Yeah. And this is the Marine Corps. What do we call this thing you're attending?
The United States Marine Corps Educators Workshop is what I've been invited to do.
The Educators Workshop is sort of like the FBI boot camp that you and I went through.
Yeah, the training academy.
Except this is harder. And and they had to go to California. And you're there with Mark Carman and Jackie Paulus and Shanae from our staff upstairs. Yeah. How's everybody?
Go ahead. Your question.
I know it's hard. Yeah, everybody wants to do the talk show. It's like when we dance. You got to follow my lead. But how are the others holding up? Because you've had to do some physical stuff yourselves, right?
I have to say, Carm has been actually Carm, Shanae, and Jackie are first of all incredible traveling pals. But all of us have been excelling at different athletic feats. Although I think that Shanae of all of us has had to do what we do: walking backwards, holding a camera over rocky terrain.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's not as easy as it looks. So what are you doing? Are they making you go through some of the boot camp stuff?
Yes. I did the bayonet course. And if anyone listens to my show overnight, you can go ahead and text Steve what happened to me. I'm not going to share it in the morning. It's, you know, too many people on the way to work. Maybe they're eating breakfast, but I'll have to tell you what you and I will talk in private later. But right. I believe the recruiter said it was the first time they've heard that happen. There's a moment where I was lying in the sand going, let's just pretend like I'm in the kitty litter and I need to lay here for a second. Hey, I've had two kids. Things have changed, all right?
It's totally fine. Don't you let them pick on you.
In that course, I call it extreme kegeling. That's all I'm saying.
What is left for you to do over the next couple of days? What are you guys coming home?
We are trailing the Marines who've just completed the Crucible. There are about 300 Marines that finished, including those three young men I sent a picture of are from the Chicagoland area.
Up at Cochran Show.
All of them.
Yeah, it's up at Cochran Show and Steve Cochran Show on Facebook, and I'm sure it's up for social on yours as well. Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing more training today at Camp Pendleton, actually, which is about 40 miles away from the Marine Recruit Depot, which is where we did some of the boot camp training.
I want to get Andre in here to talk to you as well, but what is the Crucible? Explain what that is to people.
It's about a 45-mile hike over 50 hours. They're challenged mentally, physically, and morally. This is the final phase and the hardest part, and we'll be sending some footage of these men finishing, getting to the very end, where they are told they are now Marines. They've gone from recruits after about 12 weeks of hard training. They've done the hardest part, and we've been here with a lot of other like sergeants and other men who've gone through this, and they were all, I have photos of them, too, because they're just so moved by what they went through and to have the opportunity to see other Marines now joining them. Not many Marines even get to experience this.
That's cool.
Once they're done, they go on and follow their careers, but coming back and seeing it's been really emotional for them as well.
Patty, what an amazing experience for you. I just want to know, have you shaved your head and have you told anyone, I got nowhere to go?
I would go more of the G.I. Jane route, and there's some language maybe I've been using that isn't fit for radio. But,
it's fit for Marine boot camp.
If anyone's going to join the Marines, I would think it would be Jackie. She's kicked all of our asses on some of these physical challenges. Yeah, don't shake your head at me. I saw you jump in that foxhole.
I'm proud of you guys. It's a very cool thing. We want to thank David Hochberg, by the way, David Hochberg, Pearl Mortgage, for sponsoring this. But I don't know anybody that's as big a supporter of military causes than he is. And the whole point, again, is to give members of the media in prominent positions an opportunity to see what it is to become a Marine.
Well, and one of the things that a pilot told me yesterday, the crew chief or an Osprey, Hotless told me that he read that this is the generation of high school students that are the most weary, they're most afraid of joining the military. And that's because, you know, in their lifetimes, that's been constant coverage. And, you know, I asked one of the sergeants, like, what do you say? What do you say to parents who are worried about sending their children off? And he's like, you know, this is an important decision. It's not one that's taken lightly. There is a danger. There's no denying it. But it's also one of the most gratifying and rewarding careers you can choose. There are a lot of us who are like, you know, I didn't know this much about it. And you mentioned David Hochberg. You know, we've learned a lot about access to information to make sure that our men and women in the service know what's out there and available to them, both when they're in service and once they leave and enter civilian life. And I want to thank Mark Doyle, who's joining with David Hochberg, and they're going to, pair up veterans who are homeless with a home, abandoned homes, fix them up.
Yeah.
And it's a great program they're starting in April.
Well,
yeah, we've learned so much. I have so much to tell you. I don't have enough time.
No, the show's off at 10, but the good news for you is you have pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Yes. You've been doing the show live from San Diego, and you're on again tonight, right?
I'm not. I have. I actually.
That's my point. You're not on at all. It's my point. Is what I'm trying to make.
We had to muster at 3:45 this morning. I had stayed up and done the show.
Really?
And Todd Manley and Stephanie Menendez decided that rather than letting me die,
right,
I could take a night off. So I'm grateful for that.
That seems like a good call. So you're off tonight then?
Yes. We'll be back in studio on Monday night with many of the recruiters that we've been working with here in San Diego.
Got it.
Yes.
Nice job. Don't get hurt.
I won't. So far, so good.
All right.
Jackie, not so much.
Okay. All right. Call me and tell me all the stuff you can't say on the air later.
Oh, all right. You might want to record it. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All right. See you. Hoorah. At Patty Vasquez, CHI. Here's the thing. And thank Patty, if you would, please. I love Patty, but here's the thing. If you're a drill instructor and you're talking to Patty, don't you think at some point you quit being a drill instructor? You just move on to something else?
Maybe.
You can't out-talk Patty. You can't.
No.
It's part of her charm. The Energizer Bunny called and go, I gotta get a nap.
Now, a milestone in broadcasting history.
Oh, the humanity.
A benchmark in the long and legendary story of WGN Radio.
WGN Chicago.
Get ready to be a part of one of the most amazing mornings in radio lore.
The greatest that God ever created.
Steve Cochran's 600th show. It happens in 5, 4, 3, 2. I can't.
Cut, rewind.
I can't fake it.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah. Okay, you know there's going to be blowback.
I know. I'll get 50 emails.
Hey, it's your arm.
You know, here's the deal. He's not wrong. It's 600 shows.
It is. It is a milestone in radio lore.
Big friggin' deal. 600 shows. It's a nice thing. It's a nice thing, but it's, you know, let's not make a federal case out of it. Kevin, what happened with the parade? I thought the Ram was going to put a parade on or something.
We decided to postpone it until the 700th show.
Maybe we should go, like, what should the next really big celebration be? I guess we got to wait till 1,000, huh?
No, I'd say 700.
I'd say 1,000.
Yeah. I mean, who cares about 700?
Every couple hundred.
Maybe like 728, we'll pick a random number to celebrate.
Or 720. Let's do 720.
Oh, 720. Yeah, show number 720.
Yeah,
no, we're assuming I'm going to get to 720. That's 120 shows away. So we're standing by for Brian Dennehy. Brian Dennehy is scheduled to appear in a new movie called Knight of Cups that's opening this weekend. Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T. Knight of Cups. This is a Hollywood drama. With Christian Bale, Cate Blanchett, Natalie Portman, Antonio Banderas. It's a heck of a cast. I mean, it really is.
And Imogen Poots. I don't know who that is. I just wanted to say that name as I look at the cast.
Oh, Imogen Poots. I'm a big Imogen Poots fan.
Oh, are
fan.
You? Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of the fan
yeah.
club?
Yeah, totally. Nick Offerman's even in this movie. And Ben Kingsley? Good God, man.
Boy.
It's thenightofcupsmovie.com if you want to check it out online. And again, it's a drama in Hollywood about people in. I'm tap dancing as fast as I can here waiting for Brad Dennehy.
It sounds good, though. Big cast.
Yeah, it is a big cast.
Good interview, 600 shows.
Loosely based on your life, correct, Steve?
It is, yeah. Based on the synopsis I've read of Knight of Cups,
right.
Knight of Cups follows an uninspired screenwriter and taking part in all of L.A. has to offer, a slave to the Hollywood system, ends up getting distracted by a string of women. There's death, there's intrigue, there's murder, there's probably drugs and booze. Look, the whole thing reminds me of my life.
Addicted to success, it says.
Totally, totally. Yeah, this is the Steve Cochran story. I am the Knight of Cups.
You are.
Oh, we have him? Oh, God, I hope he wasn't listening. The great Brian Dennehy, it's been a very long time, and he joins us now. Forget about everything I just said, Mr. Dennehy. Forget about that.
Now it's the great Brian Dennehy. I wasn't there 2 minutes ago. I got that big gorilla actor on the phone, a pain in the ass. Jesus Christ, I have to take these calls.
I was tab dancing as fast as I could.
Okay, I heard it all.
Christian Bale, Kate Blanchett, Natalie Portman. Who isn't in this movie?
Brian Dennehy.
No, you're in this
movie. He actually is in the movie, yeah. Not very much, but I'm in it.
All right, look, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. Why stop now?
That's right. I mean, a lot of people want me to, but I refuse.
I'm looking at IMDb. You got projects on the books for 2017.
No, not really. I got one project on for next week, and as far as I know, we go back to answering the phone quickly again.
So does your agent call and you go, "Leave me alone. I don't want to work this week"?
Well, it depends. You know, it depends on the situation. There's hardly ever a time that I don't want to work. I'd rather work than not.
Sure.
But, you know, sometimes you got to say, no, I don't, not for that money. And you know, if it's a really interesting project, of course, they don't want to pay you anything because they know you want to do it.
Yeah.
And also I do a lot of theater, which makes it difficult to do the other stuff because, of course, you have to plan so far ahead with theater.
And by the way, theater pays nothing.
You know, you might be on the hook for something a year out with the theater. And at my age, that's definitely playing Russian roulette.
We don't want to plan too far.
It's not my problem. You know, it becomes their problem.
Right. Brian Dennehy couldn't be here tonight or any other night. You don't want to get to that point.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He won't be back next week either.
All right. So, Knight of Cups. Have you seen the finished project?
I have. Yeah.
And
it's a really provocative and very interesting. You know, this guy is a brilliant guy. I mean, he was summa cum laude from Harvard, mm-hmm. taught at MIT. He's a really very, very hugely philosophical, very deep philosophical thinker. And,
yeah.
and, you know, the rarest of thing in Hollywood. I mean,
sure.
to put him into that category at all. His pictures are always very stimulating if you have that kind of a mind, if you're interested in that kind of a thing and you're not just looking for the next car chase. That's why all these people wanted to work with him, and nobody got paid because he goes to a place that not too many people go to in Hollywood, and which is really what the picture is about.
Yeah,
a screenwriter who successfully winds up in Hollywood, and then tries to figure out what it is that he has in his hand, what he's holding. And which is why the subtitle is a Pearl of Great Price. And anyway.
Is it autobiographical for Terrence Malick to make this movie?
Well, I think it probably is to some extent autobiographical. Certainly parts of it, the relationship with his father was a very difficult one. And his brother did die under very unusual circumstances in Mexico. Those are two of the elements of the picture that are not, in this particular picture, are not emphasized very much as they were in the last one, but are very important in the understanding of who Terry is. And he's, you know, I'll tell you, to work with him is just really fascinating because his mind is so
Well, that's, I mean, so that's a hell of a compliment. I mean, that's a hell of a compliment coming from you. You've worked with everybody. I hope he appreciates that.
And I've worked with some good people, but this is, he does a whole different thing. He's interested in a whole different thing, and trying to understand, you know, so many people in this business become movie stars, they become successful directors. And let's face it, they're convinced that they absolutely deserve it. There was no question.
Right.
Their talent is such that, you know, they had it coming, and they'll die. They'll go to the graves thinking, I was great, and I deserve to be great. And
right.
Terrence is always looking at the other side. Why has this been given to me, or why did I successfully get this? What's involved in that task? What's involved in that success? Why is it important? Why does it seem to be important? And if it is important, what do I do with it? How do I use it? How do I take advantage of it in the most rewarding way for the most people? Those are questions that hardly anybody ever asks in Hollywood, of course.
Yeah, well,
he dwells on them.
Isn't it cool to be at this point in your career to meet somebody that still inspires you on that level?
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, I do get inspired. You know, the funny thing is, I'm inspired by Eugene O'Neill.
Sure.
I mean, very few people have done as much O'Neill as I have, and every time I go back to it, either in a new play or a play that I've done before, I'm inspired all over again. And the same was true with Arthur Miller. I mean, I could do Salesman probably every two or three years for the rest of my life and never be bored, because there's always some new discovery, some new stunning awareness that reveals itself while you're doing the work.
I actually saw you when you were at the Goodman Theater with Nathan Lane during the last run of Iceman Cometh.
Iceman, yeah.
Oh, it was wonderful and brilliant, and your performance phenomenal. I just was amazed at the tenacity. I mean, that's a 3.5-hour performance. You know, you put your heart and soul in every performance. It's got to be tedious as an actor.
You must have gone home early. It's 4.5 hours.
It is. You know what? You're right. There's two intermissions. I'd never been to a play. It was
missed the last act.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Denahi,
I was sweating.
Denahi's the Springsteen of theater.
I was sweating, and I wasn't even on stage.
That's right. No, it's a great play, Iceman. I did several times before, in which I played Hickey, Nathan's part. And then Nathan and I talked about doing it together, and with Bob, of course. And we finished it up at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, I guess it was last spring, and had a wonderful time. It was great there, too.
There's nothing like a live audience.
It's awesome.
There's nothing like a live audience for an actor, for a stand-up. That's got to be the best for you.
Yeah, well, the only real question mark is the word live, you know, whether they're really alive or not. I've worked in front of audiences which, as far as I'm concerned, could be wrapped up and shrink-wrapped and taken out to the ambulance. But that play, both in Chicago and in Brooklyn, had wonderful audiences, very receptive, very tuned into it. They wanted to be there. They wanted to have the whole experience. And at the end of it, they just showed their appreciation for what they had seen and what they'd heard. But that's O'Neill. I don't have any illusions about that stuff. You know, I thought people talk
phenomenal
about the Tonys.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
The guy, as far as I'm concerned, the guy who won my Tony was Arthur Miller, and the guy who won the other Tony was Eugene O'Neill.
Well, that's very nice of you.
You
know what that is?
Illusions about who the important character is there.
But that's very Chicago writer of you. I know how good this town is to you, and I know how much you love Chicago. But that's a little Chicago take on things. I hate to break it to you, you've had a hell of a career, and it's not over yet.
Well, I hope so. I hope you're right.
The new movie is called Knight of Cups. Again, we believe it's loosely based on my own life, especially the seedy parts. And it opens this weekend.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of cups in my life, or glasses, in some cases broken ones. But it's Terrence Malick, who is an extraordinary, extraordinary director and an extraordinary talent. And his work deserves to be seen by everybody.
I agree. Big fan. Very big fan.
Yeah.
All the best. I know you got to talk to some lesser lights, but I really appreciate you being on whenever you're around. And when you're in town, come see us.
Everything for Chicago. That's my town. I love that town.
All right, bud. All the best. Brian Dennehy.
I mean, you should have seen him on stage. He and Nathan Lane.
I have seen
it
him
was
on stage.
4.5 hours.
No, I have seen him on stage.
Forgot about the
77 years old.
He's awesome.
The cinematic American masterpiece, Tommy Boy, that Brian Dennehy was in.
Yeah, I thought he might get emotional about that because it was such an emotional part for him.
Did he get an Oscar nod for that?
Yeah. He was robbed.
Oscar from The Odd Couple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that's Brian Dennehy. I was going to ask him about Christian Bale and if Christian Bale's nuts to work with. Because Christian Bale, did you see The Big Short?
Yeah.
Christian Bale was so good in The Big Short. Christian Bale's good in everything. But Christian Bale's a whack job.
Oh, completely.
You know, Brian Dennehy sounds like a regular guy.
You think?
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever spent any time with him in person. He's been in studio a couple times. But
well, now he's portraying
doesn't
you.
Dennehy feel like the kind of guy you'd want to hang out with?
I think so, yeah.
Just to hear the stories he wouldn't tell you on the show? Thanks to Richard Quest and all of our guests this morning and the great Brian Dennehy a few moments ago. Wendy's here. By the way, we ran out of time to play today's Hawkopedia. Let's podcast that so people can hear it online.
Can't you just do it?
We thanks could, but then we cut into your show.
Go ahead.
Thanks to Freshwave for sponsoring that.
Freshwave, the official deodorizer of the Chicago Blackhawks. Remember, if it smells funky like the wrong end of a monkey, you need Freshwave.
I don't know if this is appropriate, but could I invite Kevin to do it on the first part of our show after news?
I'm busy that time of the day. I'm kidding.
Okay,
sure.
I rescind my invitation.
Kidding, Wendy. Of course I'll
kidding.
Stick around.
That's Kevin kidding. It looks a lot like Kevin being serious, but that's actually the same face. Bill's off today. What are you doing?
We talked to Bernie Sanders' wife yesterday, Jane O'Meara Sanders. She was very pleasant. So we have extended the invitation for Hillary Clinton's husband to call in. So if Bill Clinton would like to call in, we have some cigars for him. And we'd talk to him
as
well.
That's a good idea.
I have a picture with him.
That's a good idea.
Well, what about Trump? I'm way in the background.
What about Trump's wife?
I don't want to talk to her.
Melania?
Yeah, I don't know.
She wouldn't be a long conversation.
Marco Rubio's wife?
Sure, bring them all. Wives Club.
Okay. I like that, though. So, again, the all call is out. If Hillary Clinton's husband would like to call, please call the hotline.
It's so nice to say that instead of Bill Clinton's wife.
Yeah, I got it.
Hillary's husband.
We'll see you tomorrow.